This is Critical Nonsense, our high-lowbrow show about culture, science, and tech. This week, Joey asks me about the WeWork bubble, and I ask Joey about the school calendar.
Woo! Oh, hello. This is what a Joey sounds like.
Hi, Joey.
And this is what an executive producer and gardener, Jess Vander, sounds like.
Hi, this is Jess. Gardener of pea shoots.
I always make your reference related to the topics that we're going to speak about. But at the opening one, you never, like, why would I call you a gardener?
Who has any idea about that? I also think that you might not realize, but some of the ones that you choose for me, I think have come up multiple times. Like, there might be something inside you that's like, Jess is an avatar. Or like,
your avatar is a gardener and pugilist?
Yeah.
It's just me and Jess this week. Aaron.
Left us.
Gallivanting somewhere.
Classic.
Masquerading.
Maybe having a bagel or something. I really hope he's enjoying a bagel right now.
That's a lot less interesting than...
Hey, no. Don't you wish that you were enjoying a bagel right now?
He's either gallivanting or having a bagel. It's one of two. He's definitely having a bagel.
Or both. Yeah. Can one gallivant holding a bagel?
Yeah, not mutually exclusive concepts.
It's true. Joey.
Jess.
Tell me. What is this bubble and what does working...
Download, rate, and review.
Words.
So... I've been having a lot of conversations recently about WeWork, which I feel like many people probably are having conversations about WeWork because they are approaching or have been trying to approach an IPO. Initial public offering, if you're unaware of what an IPO is, meaning that they are going to go from private to public on the stock market. Again, they want to. This herein lies the rub. Over the past, I guess it's probably been maybe since May or June when a lot of information has started to come out around them. I think because there are a number of things driving this. They are kind of getting more intense scrutiny around their books, around their business, around, you know, how they are going to be valued when they go public, right? Like, up until now, when you're in a private market, you kind of go into a presentation at some VC firm and you say, this is what we're worth and this is why we think we're worth it. And if you want to buy some of our shares, our private shares, then this is how much it's going to cost you for this percentage. And it's all, you know, based on handshake agreements and people not actually like their contracts, but it's like, we agree that that is your value, or, you know, we'll come to some agreement through a negotiation. When it's on the public exchange, everyone has to be able to buy at this equivalent rate. And right now, all the information that's coming out about WeWork is that effectively they have radically overvalued themselves in all of these, you know, venture meetings and rounds of funding raising. And at the beginning of September, they were valued, according to at least themselves and maybe some of their investors, at $47.5 billion.
Wow, many billion. That's a lot.
The issue is they don't really have the business to support that, the revenue, the, you know, anything else. And the CEO is getting in a lot of trouble, which we can talk about. So my question to you, Jess, is when will the venture bubble pop and will WeWork be the pin?
Pop. That was WeWork.
Snap, crackle.
That was WeWork bursting the speculative VC bubble.
Yeah.
A couple weeks ago, maybe because, my brother shared it in his newsletter, as I often read the things he shares, but also because it was really interesting, read the Wii company S1, which is like the registration form for prep for the IPO.
Yeah.
And it is truly hilarious. Like, it's not
exciting Saturday reading,
yeah, but but it actually is super funny, like the way certain things are written. And it's, you know, for a document that's supposed to be really dense, you don't have to read the entire thing. I certainly did not read the entire thing, but it's super entertaining. Just the way that they talk about their company. And I am excited to talk about this with you because I don't know a lot about WeWork. I mean, I know that they are this new conglomerate of community and collaboration, and
they're about we, not me.
Yeah, and
except,
well, this is the thing. So, like, their business, I know because I, for a time, worked with friends in their WeWork office. I know that it's a co-working space, right? But like, what else is WeWork to begin? Like, what is it?
Yeah. So, I've done over the past week or two, just for my own interest, before I knew we were going to talk about this, I was just like, what's going on? And because I've been having conversations with friends or my wife, or, you know, just being like, what is happening? Like, this seems super absurd, digging into it more. So they're run by a guy named Adam Neumann. He started the company, I believe, in like 2009. And he was like sort of like an oddball inventor from what I was reading on and hearing from a Wall Street Journal podcast about them. He was like doing, like, trying to invent a collapsible heel for women's shoes, they said, as well as like...
Collapsible? That seems counterintuitive.
Yeah, like a heel that can switch to flats, maybe?
I don't know. Is it like a click pen? Like, click, heel goes in, and then click, you can now walk around without a thing like stabbing through your purse.
I don't know. Apparently, it didn't work.
Like, honestly, yeah. Wait, sign me up for the click pen heel.
Yeah, and like baby clothes that had pads in the knees, so as not to hurt the baby's knees.
Yeah, for your skateboarding kids.
Yeah. And so he started the company, and I think what has driven the company is venture capital is inherently like a speculative market, right? You're saying, do I believe that this company is going to make it or not? Am I willing to like get on board this rocket ship? And what is been said in so many places about him is that he is just this charming, charismatic, sort of visionary guy, and that like he's seeing some future and he's trying to make it happen, which is great. Like, that is potentially something that you want in a leader. The issue is that when you're investing incredible amounts of money towards this idea without sort of, you know, venture capitalists are often investing in the person, not the business. And I think they'll even admit that. That's not sort of me dogging them. It's like, sort of like a known thing in Silicon Valley type of places. But with this guy, what's increasingly come out is that he has just been sort of like working the system and his company to his own benefit. He has taken out $700 million from the company, according to some reports and that I've seen both on like the email newsletter that we can share around from an NYU professor called No Mercy, No Malice, as well as some of the other articles that are coming out now. But he's taken out $700 million. He bought the trademark for the Wii company with money that he took out from the company and then sold it back to the company for $6 million. Like, that's just like one example. He took money out of the company, bought properties, and then rented those properties to the company. Like, these are sort of, he's sold out private shares for personal wealth at like a rate that apparently is unprecedented. He is just sort of like working the system for his own personal benefit. And obviously business is business, and he is the founder, and, you know, you're certainly, there is a argument to be made that he should have some personal gain from it, but he's doing it in unprecedented ways. Now. $47.5 billion. That is what the market, because everyone is throwing money into this, has said it's worth.
Yeah.
Because it's coming out of a tech company, or a company that considers itself like a tech startup, you know, in quotation marks.
That's what, I guess what I want to figure out is like, okay, so this guy... unsure, doesn't seem great, kind of confusing. and like what are the actual things that are making this company valuable on paper? Like, is it supposed to be the co-working space? Is it like the what there's like there are schools, there are you were just saying that they're like there's, apartments.
They have a school, they have some apartments for living called We Live. So this is the speculation part. $47.5 billion at the beginning of September. An equivalent size company called IWG, which used to be Regis, which is IWG stands for International Workplace Group, I believe.
Creative.
It is about the same size in terms of their business, number of properties, number of desks, all of those things as WeWork. They're worth $4 billion on their market cap. So this is what the speculative bubble is. It is that WeWork is worth 10 times more than another company that is sort of just like, we are a property company and we rent spaces and we try to make them good. They don't have that sort of narrative and story out in the market. The problem is when you're putting billions of dollars against something as an investment, you're expecting a return. But the speculative bubble is just people chasing something that they're worried that they're going to miss out on. And so everyone starts funneling money in. Now, some of the problems that have come out with this are SoftBank, which is like a major VC investor. They're just throwing money at everybody to the point where they're like a meme in like startup circles of like...
Yeah, like a super aggressive.
Yeah. They've been invested. They tried to buy them last year, but their board of directors are like, you can't buy this company because they're not worth that money that you want to buy them for. Like, we won't allow this to happen. Then SoftBank reinvested more money and this year took out loans. Like, they took out debt on their ownership shares in WeWork.
Wow.
Now, I said that at the beginning of September, they were worth $47.5 billion. There's like new reports coming out that as part of their IPO, they would at minimum have to cut that value in half because it doesn't match. People are like, we're not going to let you do a public offering at that rate. Like, you're not making that money. They're burning $2 billion a year. They're $2 billion a year in the red currently.
Yeah. Pretty bleak.
Yeah.
Well, okay. So, it's one example, but it also sounds like you're suggesting this is a thing that's happening again. You know, is what you're saying .com.2 is happening soon?
I think this is happening in a lot of places because we've seen some companies become wildly disruptively successful, right? Like your Googles, your Facebooks, your Amazons that are actually making money and at like an incredible rate, right? Like the owners of those companies are among like the top richest people in the world. And so people are wanting to get on board those rocket ships. But the result of that is people taking considerable gambles along the way to try and get aboard one of those rocket ships and make some outmoded amount of wealth, right? Like the fabled 100x investment, right? Where you put in $1 million and you get back $100 million. And so that chasing is very cultural, right? Like it is the Dutch disease, the tulip mania of the 1635.
Wait, what is that?
Tulip mania was a speculative bubble that happened in Amsterdam and the Netherlands in, like, it reached its peak, I guess, in 1635 to 1637, where people were selling and exchanging tulip bulbs for values that were, like, wildly greater than an average citizen's annual income. Like, individual tulip bulbs. One of the big examples that they give that I pulled up for this was by 1635, a sale of 40 tulip bulbs for 100,000 florins.
What's 100,000? 100,000 florins sounds like, yeah, so much. But yeah. I also was like, wait, I have no sense of what that
means.
No,
it is. But it says, by way of comparison, a ton of butter, like a metric ton of butter, cost 100 florins. And
whoa,
a skilled laborer might earn 150 to 350 florins a year. So that gives you idea of like...
So these tulips are like the most valuable thing.
And they were exchanging hands as much as 10 times a day.
Wow.
And it started to get to this point where people were like exchanging like IOU, basically. Like,
need me those tulips.
Certificates on tulips.
Oh my gosh, this is where the gardening came from.
Yes, this is where
I now get it. A tulip gardener.
But we're seeing other sort of deteriorations of these bubbles happening right now after they were public, right? So Uber had this incredible like rocket ship. They're one of the few other companies that had a estimated market cap above $40 billion. And their stock value right now is worth, from Wall Street Journal, I believe they said it is worth less than it was in 2014. So it had this meteoric rise and their business just doesn't support a value. And comes back to this idea of like, what is the reality? Yeah. You have made a real estate company as WeWork that has desks for people to rent or homes for people to rent or schools for people to pay you to go around the world. But you're also wildly leveraged because a lot of those are rental places that you're renting. So you are still going to have to be paying that regardless of whether anyone buys a desk. So that's your business, but your CEO is exciting. And
yeah,
we think that there is some future that will far exceed that. And those things don't match. But like, you still have to put real money down on the table.
And I mean, what's kind of scary is I feel like a lot of that is just like the promise of a brand is so powerful that like that can kickstart a company, but if they don't have the business model to support it, like if that will come back to bite them.
Yeah. I mean, there was a lot of talk about Amazon for a long time because I don't think they turned a profit until like 2014. But part of that was because they were just constantly reinvesting all of they still had like in 2014, I think it was, they had the first year that they turned a profit, whenever it was they were making $250 billion a year in revenue, but they had $250 million in profit.
Yeah.
So, which $250 million in profit, great profit number.
Right, but comparative.
Yeah, it is like not great, but they were just reinvesting all of the money that they're making back into their business, which is why they are, a hegemonizing swarm now. Like,
Joey.
but they were making money. Google was making money. And even if they didn't have profit at the end of the year, it was because that money was being put somewhere else to set up the company for growth. And when you're looking at some of these companies like Uber or, Tesla is a great example. Tesla is producing a product that everyone loves. They're generating revenue and profit and all of these things every year, but the speculative bubble puts Tesla's market cap, which is, I don't know the exact number, but maybe 100,000 or 1 million cars a year, something like that. Meanwhile, their market cap is greater than General Motors, who is producing, tens of million cars around the world every year, and selling those cars and has leases and all of these different things. And it's a product of people in the market saying, we believe Tesla will be greater than General Motors. And maybe they will, but like today, that is not real value.
Yeah, it's like, it's the sex sells of business, I feel like.
Yeah.
It's like, ooh, this is so flashy and cool and the future and Mars.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Let's put all our money there.
Yeah.
And likewise, this is like community and the gig economy. Like, let's put all our money there. And in concept, that isn't necessarily bad. It's just, guess all of it comes down to what actually is happening.
Yeah. But like even in these cases of Uber and WeWork, my question is that like, is it good for the world, even like to take it to some really dramatic place, because these companies are taking this meteoric rise. They are eating up other companies along the way, killing other smaller businesses along the way that are local, which local shared working spaces may actually be a better product where the person who's running the business lives in your community and all of that. I don't know, but they're buying up these places, and then the CEOs are conducting sort of pretty problematic practices. Travis Kalanick, Adam Neumann are getting accused of, you know, different types of terrible things, but terrible things.
Yeah, and at the same time, for consumers, having scale and low costs is like so amazing and awesome. And there are things that you can get from big companies that you can't get from little ones. I don't know. It's a hot mess. I don't know when this bubble's popping. I don't know if WeWork is like the linchpin of all of it, but it, or just regular pin.
Yeah.
But it does sound like, it doesn't sound great. I'm going to say it doesn't sound great.
Yeah. If you're thinking about investing, maybe do some reading before you buy up some of that stock.
Or just throw caution to the wind and just gamble your money away.
Yeah. Or do
alternatively,
that.
Do the opposite. All of in. That.
That is perfect financial advice. And a very Jeff statement.
Do we need to have a tulip bubble vocal cleanse?
Pop, 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 pop.
Yeah, I don't know what that would sound like, but.
You sound like you're going to cry.
Is that just me most of the time? Just on the verge of tears.
Just talking about WeWork just brings a tear to
my
eye.
But this actually is a very melancholic topic that I want to talk about. I know sometimes or it could be positive. I don't know. We'll see.
Sanguine Jess.
Sanguine. Here's the thing. For some people, this is the first time ever that they're not going back to school. This, and probably this week is the first time it's actually sinking in. Like last week would have actually been the first week of school, but this week they're like, "Ooh, smells like fall. Things are happening in fall time." And
smells
I
like Teen Spirit.
Doing, oh yeah, right. Whatever.
Whatever you're old.
Yeah. Okay. It's finally settling in. Okay. This, I'm now doing something different with my life. Whether it's because you graduated college and you're off starting a new job for the first time, or you're one of the people who is not having a kid earlier on in life and you're putting that off, and so you're not being wrapped back into the world of school and having your days revolve around school. And I guess I was starting to think about what happens when you lose that, because, you know, it is so much a part of how people compartmentalize their lives is by school. You know, school starts, when school ends, you have break and all your friends gather around this. And then, you know, you go back and then you have finals and then you have summer, and summer becomes like the big thing in between one school year and the next school year. And I guess for people who don't have the school year, it's a weird thing for, especially as we get older and as all of these different life stages change. So what I want to know is, what do we do without the school year?
Get a job.
Okay, actually, yeah, that's a good point too, right? Because it's not like there's not other stuff happening. Let me clarify. It's about like, how do we figure out what to do with our time if it's otherwise just endless.
No, I think so as you were talking about this, my first thought is that sort of the structural nature of a school year creates sort of key moments of synchrony for, you know, entire groups of people. But as it relates to like why it's relevant to you, it's like within your own community as an individual, is like that there is synchrony, right?
Yes,
like
exactly
that your vacations are happening at the same time,
right?
That your, you know, breaks are happening at the same time, that your week is structured in the same way, that, you know, field trips, like all of, there is sort of this group synchrony that happens that you can sort of, you know, inherently entropy sets in and people start moving in different directions. And then there's sort of these events that sort of create a structure, yeah. a set of anticipation, an ability to make sense of the world because school starts the Wednesday after Labor Day yeah. or, you know, whatever it is, depending on the community that you're in.
Epic but that, folder sales.
I think about this a lot as it relates to traditions because I live away from my family. My family's in New Hampshire and I'm in New York. And my wife's family lives in New York, but they have different traditions. She's Chinese American. Her parents are immigrants. And so they have different traditions that I don't know. And also there is some language barrier with her parents and that side of things. So like even in their traditions, I don't have the full context or, mm-hmm. or anything like that. And so, you know, when I moved to New York, sort of slowly stopped doing the things that everyone always did when I was growing up of like, I didn't really do anything for Halloween. Like I didn't, you know, want to go out somewhere and get wasted and not that I don't like to drink, but like I didn't want to go do that sort of version of the event in the city or, you know, like 4th of July, if I couldn't make it home, like had the traditions change or Christmas change. Like at some point I stopped buying a Christmas tree just because I was like, oh, that's like a schlep to bring a Christmas tree upstairs for a month. And you know, maybe now that I have a kid, that will change again.
Yeah.
Although she would absolutely pull it down. I'm 100% certain.
I will climb to the top of yeah. this tree.
So, but like those sort of calendar traditions also act like a structure of like,
yeah.
you know, depending on your, you know, even across religions, right? Like high holidays in Judaism or high holidays in Islam sort of create like these moments of synchrony where, like during Eid, you're, you know, fasting together at the same time with your community. So yeah. you have this shared event across a community that is great. And I think that more than anything is what the school year potential value is a structure to the year.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing, though, that is different about the school year versus holidays, which is, I think, what you were describing is school is actually so much more a unifier across different types of cultures, right? And the thing with holidays is that they are culture specific. So, you know, there are some things that interweave together where you can cast the widest net to try and bring as big of a community together as possible. Like the holiday season at the end of December casts a pretty wide net, but it's not totally inclusive. And since it's wide enough, at least in the states where the school year also tends to revolve around, like those are interwoven together and it creates that structure there. But, you know, there's a kind of sort of humbling nature of the structure that school provides that I also think is really, it's primed, you know, cross culture friendships so that, you know, everybody is free at this time of year and we can hang out.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think, like, I'm thinking about some of the other, right, the school year doesn't change because it's profitable, right? Like, I'm thinking about pumpkin spice lattes started this year at, like, the end of August or something, and yeah. it was, like, one of those, like, quick news cycle hits where, like, every morning show and every, you know.
It's back!
Yeah. Pumpkin spice is back, like, and everyone being like, I love my PSL, like, but all this is stuff.
So this is the thing, though, is I got, like, part of me thinks that the pumpkin spice latte and the taste of fall and like that becoming a thing is our chance or our stab at trying to fill this like back to school shaped hole in our hearts.
Yeah.
That, you know, like a trip to Staples and stocking up on a lot of new Crayola pencils that you don't need. Like, what do we do if we can't have that because we don't have a use for it? Well, we can toss back these sugary and or toasty fall reminiscent flavors.
Well, but the point that I was trying to make was that like school year is 180 days, right? Like it is, that's the structure, and the school year doesn't like move up to July because, you know, Starbucks is like, well, it would be pretty good if we started selling a lot of these blanks, you know, like the Board of Education's not like, we'll be making more money if we actually start school in the middle of August. And so like the benefit of the school year is that it is like a stable structure for the most part. Whereas like pumpkin spice lattes before were like at least started in fall. Like August is fully summer. It is like a, they were starting at like a month from when even autumn starts. And so you're bleeding those sort of moments of anticipation. Like the benefit of fall when it arrives is like, it's fall, I'm wearing a sweater, right? Like you can celebrate that moment. But if you're starting to blur the joy of that seasonal transition and changing your expectations into July 4th, like it doesn't carry that same gravity anymore.
Right. And you're breaking the structure, which is the thing that we want, right? Like, and probably for people who are younger, right? Like that's one of the scariest parts about adulthood is being like, oh my God, my time is so unstructured.
Yeah.
And actually on the opposite scale too, you know, my Abu, who's turning 97 in a couple of weeks, older folks don't have structure either, and if anything that can be like really problematic if you if you don't have some way to ground your calendar, like
Tuesdays,
the days bleed
Fridays.
And I genuinely think that the more structured that we can be, it can make us more productive, or it can make us happier, all sorts of things, and maybe not so much so, but what happens when you totally like everything bleeds together?
But it's also like the joy of, there is like a bittersweet joy of anticipation, right? Like something is coming, but I can't have it now. Like part of what makes many events exciting is the buildup of anticipation, right? This is a point that I saw at some point about vacation planning. If you plan your own vacation ahead of time and you're like, learning about the places that you're going and all of these things, it builds up this excitement to go so that excitement is then paid off at the moment, versus if you don't plan your vacation and you arrive and it's just like, I'm here, what am I doing? Like you have no idea. There hasn't been any anticipation built up to pay off. And I think that's sort of the issue with like the bleed of the pumpkin spice latte. Like I'm just using that as a metaphor for many things, but like, you know, if you're doing like, you know, they're selling Halloween costumes right now. It's not for 2 months.
Yeah.
Or the, you know, what used to be like the 25 days of Christmas is now like the 75 days of Christmas. And so
you're like, that just doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Stop adding days of Christmas.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, people get mad though, right? That's the thing that makes me laugh is like, people will be like, oh, it's too soon. Like they're already like, when you always hear the phrase, like, I can't believe they're already selling blank candy.
Yeah.
It's
Halloween
always...
peeps at Duane Reade.
That's the wrong holiday.
Peeps are for Easter, first of all. You know, I think you want to have some set of anticipation and build up and then pay off. And when you're blurring your anticipation with anticipation for other events, right? Like right now it is like the onset of autumn is the event for September, and then maybe Halloween is the event for October, and then Thanksgiving is the event for November. And like you can be like, once the month shifts or like general thing happens, you can anticipate the next thing. But when, you know, Christmas stuff is happening before Thanksgiving, it's like, let me enjoy this first.
I guess if,
get off my porch.
Yeah,
get off my lawn.
So if we have holidays and we have seasons, and those are kind of what we rely on when we don't have school, and those even tend to start bleeding because of the way that they're treated by businesses XYZ, you know, what would be a better way, maybe like a more inclusive and less bleedy way to structure our years.
Well, no, I think like the structure, if you do it right, works right now. Like if you think about when the key events are happening, with the potential exception of like January doesn't really have a thing. Like there are like, we have Martin Luther King Day as like a day off, yeah. I suppose.
And now but we have like Blueberry Muffin Day, yeah. Or like National Skateboard Day.
But like the events that are happening in the fall in particular and into winter are for a particular reason, right? Like the Festival of Lights that is Christmas and or Hanukkah, and happen across like other cultures, right? Like, is because it is like the darkest time of the year, and there's a benefit to having anticipation to look forward to a celebratory, revelatory event with family where people are coming together because you need community, you need like a neurotransmitter boost, and Christmas in sort of Christian cultures acts as that, Hanukkah mm-hmm. in Judaism acts as that, and it's a thing to bring people together, right?
Yeah.
Different cultures have sort of different gravity and weight tied into
each
that event.
Things? Right.
But having those sort of marked things, and like the summer doesn't have as many of those things because the summer is like bright and hot, yeah. And you can do a lot of things, and it's sort of inherently revelatory to just be able to go outside and jump in a river or something.
Yeah, just go outside, jump into a river.
But you, if you keep like a calendar or structure of sort of communal event types of things like that, yeah. Where everyone is like looking forward to a similar thing, where
like
synchrony,
sports season.
That's what culture is, right? Like that. There, what are the things that we share,
and what are we waiting for together?
Yeah,
and then what do we hang out together doing? Is it like putting lanterns over the water, or is it like you know, like totally having a lot of chicken tenders in front of a television because a very violent sport.
Oh, you're right. January does have Super Bowl. Never mind. I take it back.
America, come on. Yikes.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the replacement is. But even as you were talking about this, I was like, you know, what would be pretty awesome at our company is if we just took like a week or two off collectively in the summer. It would make like project running a lot smoother because everyone's out at the same time.
Yeah.
It's like we can all look forward to the same vacation time together of like, it's Thursday before we all go on vacation for a week or something like that. Like where it's like that event is synced up would build up an amount of anticipation across the team, even though people are, you know, there's a diaspora, people will go all in different directions wherever, but that we would all have an event to look forward to. And then, by the way, we just shut the company down for a week
and
sync up
thing.
People's vacation time would make summer project management a lot easier as well.
Yeah. I mean, next week, we're going on the jaunt.
We're going on the jaunt.
Which, by the way, listeners, if you don't know, we're actually shutting down for half a week next week, but we'll all be together.
In Puerto Rico.
In Puerto Rico. That's
the September event for Sylvain Labs.
That's right. That's our September event. Anyway, I'm missing school. And
how many years removed from school are you? Four?
No.
Three?
Time. What is time?
Critical Nonsense is not a WeWork production.
Instead, it's a Sylvain Labs production recorded in MacGyver Studios in New York, New York.
We'd like to, as always, thank real estate magnate and executive producer Jess Vander,
who's
right across from me.
Who's right here. Hi. And we'd also like to thank sound engineer and tulip hoarder Alex Kuntel.
We'd like to thank designer Nora Mestrit for putting up the for sale signs.
On.
She's a real estate agent.
Got it. And we'd like to thank our production help for not going back to school. Sorry, Gilbert. Les Jacobs and Tony Wong.
And as always, thanks, Lynn.
Thank you.
You know, special thanks.
Specially thanking Bubbles for being rainbow colored in the summer and for shattering on the ground in a very cold winter. Have you ever blown blown bubbles in below freezing temperatures? It's amazingly cool.
Now I have a thing I need to look forward to for the winter.
That is the thing.
That's the event.
You literally can't
bubble,
do it now.
The great bubble day of January.
Yeah, right. That's a new little known holiday.
Yeah. I'd like to thank SoftBank for sending me the check that they're going to send me, because now I've asked them. Can I get some money, please?
Money, please. I would like to thank the florins for being a currency that is interesting sounding.
I would like to thank a ton of butter.
Me? Oh my gosh. I would like to thank a ton of butter. You know, have you ever watched someone laminate butter before? It's the process of adding...
For like croissants and stuff?
Yeah. You're like adding layers of butter into pastry
and
dough.
Folding.
And you fold it over and then you... The reason it's called laminating is because you have to like press it down really flat and then you just add another layer and you do it again. So there's just like endless layers of butter. That's what I was imagining when you were describing a ton of butter. I was like, imagine a ton of butter being laminated into a ton's worth of croissant. That just sounds good.
I would not like to thank the coffee shop in my neighborhood that I desperately got a pastry from the other day because I was like hypoglycemic and I was like, I'll get a pastry, for not laminating their croissant appropriately.
Oh, so they were bad? They weren't buttery?
It was not a croissant. It was a cake.
That is true. That sounds terrible. I would like to thank... I really would like to thank Staples. I really enjoyed... I know that now everyone just buys all their back-to-school stuff online, but when I was younger, I would go to Staples and walk around the aisles and like pick out all the cool stuff.
What you're not seeing is the joy on Jess's face right now.
Off of my list of all of the different things, which is like, I know this is just definitely a privilege to be able to go around and be like, I need glue sticks. And it's like, why do we need glue sticks? And I definitely could use the ones from last year, but like new ones are so cool. There's something about new school supplies that is just so awesome. And I should just do that once a year for myself for like paper. I don't know.
Jess, I think you should just write a book report and it will probably resolve
satisfy
all
the
of
same
this.
Itch. Yeah. You just have to do some school stuff.
If anyone wants to write a book report about this episode, feel free.
Yeah, just
and
write
we'll
us.
Say thank you to
yeah.
you.
Drop us a line at criticalnonsense@sylvainlabs.com and just be like, Jess, I want to collaborate on a book report with you. And I'll be like, okay, what are we writing about?
Little Women, Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone.
Or all of the other books that
Ordinary
are also...
Ordinary People, Watership Down. I can't think of any. The Outsiders by Essie Hinton.
To Kill a Mockingbird, which is now a new show on Broadway, and probably everyone's freaking out about it, even though, hot take, I don't actually think it's that great of a book. Don't be mad!
But Aaron Sorkin.
Oh, is he directing it?
He wrote the remake.
Everyone's probably like,
it's just a long series of walk and talk. People walking around in circles on the stage. Well, we've gone off the rails, so thank you, Aaron Sorkin, and thank you for listening, and we love you, and bye.
It's nonsense, bye.
It'll get better.
Oh, God.
And then it'll get worse.
Or, you know, anybody can go back to school whenever. You can go back to school, you can gamble away all your money.
Put your money into your education instead of WeWork.
Oh, I can't like that. I can't.
Mortgage your house on your education instead of WeWork.